From Illinois Soul, this is Dialogue. I'm Kennedy Vincent. Dialogue is an exchange about culture, straight from the soul. You can catch us on Saturday mornings at 11 and Tuesdays at 7 p.m. on Illinois Soul. 66% of Black women say they changed their hair for a job interview. That's from a 2023 NBC survey. 25% of Black women say they were denied a job interview because of their hair. We've all faced this type of discrimination, wondering if our intellect and qualifications are enough, or if we have to change one of the most important essences of who we are, our hair. But it's a new era and times have changed, and we are fighting discrimination with legislation now. In 2022, Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker was determined to change that.
Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker signing the Crown Act into law today. The new law categorizes things like hair texture and styling as race-based, and that means they will be protected against racial discrimination when it comes to things like employment and housing. The governor saying Black residents have a right to style their hair however they choose. Last year, he signed a law that provided similar protections in Illinois schools.
There is no other race that has had to have their hair legislated. The signing of the Crown Act in Illinois and around the country was after decades of Black activists working across the nation as part of the natural hair movement. Our Black royalty is not determined by the law. Since this law has been passed, we still face discrimination today. But it says something about the legacy of Black hair and what makes some people so afraid of the power in our hair. Our hair tells stories, but it's not the entire book. Being royal takes work, and today we're going inside the making of our crown. Right now with Illinois Public Media's Tanisha Spain, the host of Mid-American Gardener television show. Later on, we go into the sanctuaries where our Blackness thrives authentically and unapologetically, replenishing our spirits and reminding us of who we are. Hey, Tanisha, how are you?
I am doing lovely. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. So today we're going to talk about hair.
This is a deep one. This is a deep one.
Yeah, there's a lot that we all can share of our own experience, but also what's gone through history with our hair.
And you know, it just the stories that we could all tell. I'm sure, you know, we're not a monolith, but there are those similarities that we all can sort of relate to growing up with our hair.
Mm-hmm. Whether it was your first time getting your hair braided, getting your hair pressed,
yes,
going to the shop.
Yes, yes.
Listening to the conversation in the shop or going to someone's home, going to auntie's house.
Yes, there's just so much. Sitting in between your mom or your aunties or somebody's legs, watching TV or having to hand up barrettes and hold different tools. It's just, you know, there are so many memories attached with Black hair and our hair.
Something we can all connect on is the feeling of having your hair done, or just someone like the energy touching your head and just having it braided or having it combed even or blown out. It's a special type of feeling too.
It is. And just sitting here thinking about it, you know, my grandmother and my aunts and my mom were the three people that usually provided hair care to me. And I can still remember laying on the kitchen counter. My grandma would roll up a towel and put it under the back of my neck, and my head was draped into the kitchen sink. Like, I can still remember the brand name of shampoo. I can remember how the hot comb smelled. So there are just so many positive memories. And then, of course, you know, when you go look in the mirror and you've got your, you know, your hair looks great and you can't wait to show your friends, or you can't wait to show up at church on Sunday. There's so many memories tied to that.
Yeah. You're like, ooh, I look good.
Yeah.
I woke up like this.
That's right. That's right. I mean, getting braids to the hot combs. And I've been through it all. I've had a Jerry curl. I have had the asymmetrical salt and pepper haircut. Mm-hmm. I've done straight. I've done natural. Like, that's the really cool part about Black girl hair is you can play so many parts and do so many different things and do updos. And, you know, every day of the week we could show up with a different hairstyle and can't nobody tell us nothing, you know?
Yeah, they can't tell us anything. But that's another thing that we face. Everybody wants to have an opinion on our hair. Everyone wants to touch our hair. They want to know, oh, how was it in a fro yesterday, but now it's long?
Exactly.
Well.
Yes. And those can kind of, you know, the older I get, I find myself being more comfortable in those conversations. But like in my 20s, I didn't want to talk about it. You know, I remember, you know, showing up to something with shoulder length hair and then the next day coming back and I've got, you know, braids and everybody's curious about how this happened, you know, and being in spaces where you didn't always feel comfortable explaining it, the process, or even feeling like you needed to explain the process. Mm-hmm. So you're right. There's equal sides to that. And then some people really just don't respect those boundaries. They will reach out and immediately grab for your hair or grab for a braid. And so, yeah, you definitely face those on the other side, too.
You told us a little bit about the styles you were rocking.
Sure.
What did that look like? What did that feel like to you?
Oh, man, my favorite. And this was my cousin Kim. Beads were her specialty.
Ooh.
So the women in my family just kept our hair laid. And so my cousin Kim, whenever I wanted beads, she would braid me up and put those beads on. And once those things got to clacking in the wind, like I'm riding my banana seat bike and my beads are doing their thing. Like it was just the summertime vibe of it all. I could go on and on and on. And then there was the Jerry curl phase where, now, are you familiar with Jerry curls?
I am.
Okay. So I had one of those and my dad had a Jerry curl too.
Okay,
so,
pops.
Yeah. Like we've been through it all. We've seen it all.
We have. When I was younger, I lived overseas in the Caribbean, Trinidad and Tobago, and I was on the beach, and my mom and dad were like, okay, yeah, you're going to get your hair braided. I was 4, and baby, were those braids tight.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I remember crying. I remember screaming. You know, I was a tenderhead at 4 years old. But then she put the beads in too, and it was all different colors, and it was so cute.
Yeah, it's magic. Like when they spin you around and you get to see yourself, all that pain and squirming and like crying, it's suddenly so worth it.
Everything we endured is worth it.
Yeah. And like both of us are sitting here now braided.
With braids.
I wear my hair braided a lot now, more than I did in my 20s and 30s. I'm in my 40s now. And I just love the convenience of it all.
Absolutely.
Protective styling is the way to go when you are busy and moving and grooving. And, you know, we've learned so much about chemical processing.
Yes.
And just letting our hair be.
Mm-hmm.
So I have been leaning really heavily on braids and other protective styles here lately. And it's been my jam.
Yeah, I feel you. I was beefing with my curly hair for a long time. It's crazy because I didn't even feel like I understood my curl pattern until I got to college. I didn't really know what my curls looked like because I would braid my hair at night in just two little French braids, wake up, undo it. And that's not your real curl. And fighting with products that worked for my fro. Oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got to college and we went to go get braids and twists and all the things. And I said, oh, I like this.
It's a journey.
Yeah, it is a journey.
Yes. I was a relaxer girl. So once I outgrew the pigtails and the bobos and the Jerry curl went out, I was a relaxer girl for a long time. And, you know, a lot of that is ease and convenience because it takes less time to deal with straight hair. But also there's that thing in there that sort of tells us that straight hair is what the world wants, right?
More professional.
Yes. We get that idea put into us that straight hair, Eurocentric hair is professional, is the way to go. And so it just becomes, for a long time, it became part of my identity. Until around COVID, that was the first time in a long time that I saw my real natural hair.
How did that feel?
It was crazy for
shocking.
A while. It was. And it was hard to come to grips with because I hadn't seen it in probably 20 years. I didn't know how to treat it or how to take care of it or what it needed, if it was dry, if it was oily. I had no idea how to deal with this hair as it grew out of my crown. And so I took a year to really just get to know my own hair.
Yes.
I worked with my beautician, and she knew I was a relaxer girl, obviously, and that we needed to kind of wade our way into this. And, you know, it's funny, like last summer we were trying to do silk press.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I did that in the heat of the summer.
Oh.
And then I went outside.
In humidity?
Yeah.
Ooh.
But see, I was a relaxer girl. So I'm outside working in the yard, working in the garden, and I had like a fro in no time.
She said, "Hey girl, hey."
And I was like, why is my hair like this? And she was like, "Girl, that is not a relaxer. Like, you need to act right." So I had to learn.
The humidity snatched
yes.
you.
Oh, that silk press was out of there.
Ooh.
So I had to learn those things. And I think each woman, each black woman will deal with that in her own way, in her own time. I see my mom kind of experimenting with new processes and new hairstyles. So I think as a culture, I see us all moving, not all, I shouldn't say that, but I see more people moving towards that natural
yes.
sort of, even if I want straight hair, I can do a silk press or, you know, so I love that. I love that the culture is starting to openly recognize all the things and all the styles for as beautiful as they are.
Yeah. And just openly express our creativity from the beginning. We've done cornrows and we've made patterns within our head.
Absolutely. Just the history that lies within it that you don't even realize when you think back on finger waves. And, you know, we talk a lot about braiding, but the act of just putting your hands in someone's crown and massaging the scalp, you know, those things go back generations of just caring and loving and taking care of each other. And so it's really cool to see that continues today.
It's very ancestral, and it's amazing that it continues to form and reshape, just being able to express ourselves and all of the things that we can create within our hair is a really special experience.
So, and, you know, another thing I really appreciate is how we're changing the language. So the word nappy was thrown around a lot when I was a kid. Nappy hair, nappy headed, nappy, nappy, nappy. Now, I don't hear that a lot. We call them curls. Mm. We don't call, people, we're changing the verbiage around our hair.
Which is important because words are...
Absolutely.
Affirmations are
Absolutely.
Spells.
Absolutely. So now we're calling them kinks and coils and curls instead of saying nappy headed or whatever. So I love this movement, and it's just, I love how we're embracing exactly what grows out of our head.
Embracing us.
Yes, embracing us.
What does your hair mean to you?
What does my hair mean to me? That's a tough one because it depends on the day, right? On football practice nights, I just need it to sit on top of my head and be there so that I can do what I got to do. But there are nights where I get my oils and this is a self-care routine. This is part of me loving on me, mixing up some witch hazel and some jojoba.
Yes, ma'am.
And, you know, I'm getting my shea butter and just doing me. So my hair is an extension of how I feel. And it's also, you know, it goes so far beyond just what you look like or what you present. It's part of my wellness routine, I guess, for me.
Yeah.
What about you? What is your hair to you?
It's been a journey to love my crown, but now that I can sit and love it through so many different variations, it means even more. I also learn from the girls, too, like just to have these types of dialogues and to maybe scroll on Instagram or Pinterest. OK, what am I going to tell my stylist that I want next?
Yes.
That journey is also fun to be able to adventure and explore into the new. But my crown to me represents part of my personal power. It's such a hard question.
It is, isn't it? Because some days you just want it out of your face.
Yes.
And other days it's the center of your universe. So it just depends.
Yeah. I feel like majority of the time I do sit with my fro But again, we be beefing. So a lot of the time I do feel like a lioness, mm-hmm. and that really empowers me and my energy and how I show up. And I let her do her thing, mm-hmm. especially in this humidity. A lot of the times I want it out of my face, mm-hmm. and it makes life a lot easier. Mm-hmm. My crown to me also represents the ancestors that came before me. And being able to wear it proudly with love. And like you brought up your self-care, your self-love routine, you know, sometimes I do a rosemary wash, mm-hmm. for that hair growth to cleanse out the scalp, or a scalp steam. It means a lot when I practice routines, yes. intentionally with my crown. And that grows the relationship, because she'll talk back to me. I can look at my, okay, are my curls healthy? Mm-hmm. Are they giving heat damage? Should I not do a silk press?
Yes. Like, are things crunchy right now? How are we looking? Do we need a deep conditioner? Do I need to sit under the dryer for 30 minutes with this on? What do you need, girl? What do you need? Like, yes, it's a two-way relationship.
Yeah, it is. Continuing to be open with the evolution of my crown is important to, mm-hmm. me, because it's not always going to be like this. You, mm-hmm. know, a lot of things change. Being open to the evolution is important to me as well. Being present with the evolution.
Yes. And, you know, loving your hair can sometimes be challenging as a person of color, mm-hmm. right? Because as we talked earlier, that straight European sort of essence is what we all have as our underlying current. But I think if we could all just continue to try to love our hair, love that crown, love, mm-hmm. love what you've got, mm-hmm. I think we'd all be a lot happier.
I agree. Thanks, girl.
Yeah, anytime. Anytime.
That was Illinois Public Media's Tanisha Spain, the host of Mid-American Gardener television show. Coming up next on Dialogue, we're continuing our conversation on black hair with Associate Professor of American Studies at California State University Fullerton, Dr. Kristen Denise Rowe. The Dialogue team is focused on creating a program that highlights and shares important conversations for this community. If you appreciate having a space dedicated to amplifying local Black voices, please consider a gift of support during our fall fund drive. Here's more information on how you can donate. From Illinois Soul, this is Dialogue. I'm Kennedy Vincent. Dialogue is an exchange about culture, straight from the soul. You can catch us on Saturday mornings at 11 and Tuesdays at 7 p.m. on Illinois Soul. For centuries, black hair has been trendsetting and creative, but this is not new. These are century-old traditions. In this generation, as the descendants of that lineage, we are redefining our connection to our hair. Dr. Kristen Denise Rowe joins us now. She's an associate professor of American Studies at California State University Fullerton. She takes us through the historical revolution of styles and moments throughout time when our hair has been a symbol of freedom and resistance. Dr. Kristen Rowe, thank you so much for joining me on Dialogue.
As a Black woman, how does your work integrate beauty and embodiment in Black culture?
Well, I always say in terms of kind of a lot of the work around the contemporary natural hair movement, I was a product of it, right? And so that was kind of what sparked my interest in it as an undergrad, kind of in the late 2000s, kind of late high school undergrad education in the late 2000s. And so I was sort of noticing different things around the language that was being used around styling natural hair, these conversations around texture, what folks kind of talk about as texture discrimination or curlism, things like that. I was sort of in those spaces and noticing things and kind of narratives in popular culture. I started locking my hair in 2019, and that's definitely kind of something I've definitely sort of noticed. The ways in which kind of locks are even in natural hair spaces, you don't see many of them. There's not a ton of quote unquote representation, particularly on women. I do think it's changing quite a bit. I do think in some ways we're kind of in a lock renaissance. I think there's more representation, folks like Chloe and Hallie, Ava DuVernay, as well as kind of, I think a lot of folks are just looking for things that are kind of easy and low maintenance. And so that's something I really see locks as. I always say, I think young men, I think they've kind of had a natural hair movement as well. I think you see a lot more locks, a lot more just texture.
You briefly mentioned the conversations you heard while growing up about texture. What were the conversations you were hearing? It sounded like that kind of planted a seed in you. And you were hearing more of that verbiage. What were the community or spaces you were hearing these conversations happen in?
So I think something super familiar to many of us, kind of the OG way of talking about texture, is of course the kind of good hair conversation, right? So definitely growing up, a looser curl texture, right? We have this kind of intra-racial longstanding colloquialism around good hair, which was used to describe a looser curl pattern, as opposed to kinkier, afro-textured, more kind of tightly coiled hair. You know, of course, I grew up hearing that to describe different hair textures. I certainly did not have quote unquote good hair by that definition, but yeah, I certainly heard that language. And so in the contemporary natural hair movement, which takes off kind of around 2005, we see less describing hair as good hair, quote unquote. I think that that phrasing has kind of fallen out of fashion. You know, I think many argue a kind of overrepresentation in terms of influencers, commercial spaces, of kind of those looser curls, those threes, things like that. And so much of the kind of language and styling as well. But in terms of kind of what the products are selling, right? They're often kind of selling curl definition, quote unquote. They're often kind of selling smooth or defrizzing products. They're often sort of selling products that stretch hair, right? So kind of pre-2000s, right, we see this kind of good hair, this kind of really kind of blatant language used to create this hierarchy of hair texture. Past, you know, 20 years or so, I would say, post-natural hair movement, we see less of that kind of good hair being articulated in that really explicit way. But we do see kind of see these kind of more insidious, kind of less overt kind of hierarchies of like curl and styling. And so the bottom line, right, at the end of the day, what it all boils down to is this kinky, tightly coiled hair texture that is most deeply associated with Black people in a sort of widely anti-Black world is going to be kind of denigrated, is going to be at the bottom of the hierarchy, is going to be marginalized. And so we see that historically. We arguably still see that today, again, just kind of in couched in this different kind of language.
Tell me an outline of the history of hair activism.
We could go to some of the earliest pre-colonial, we could go to kind of continental Africa around like braiding patterns and shells and decorations and beads were really common. And these different patterns and practices would reflect different ethnic groups in Africa and different social status and age and marriage status and things like that. Kind of after those encounters with slavery and colonialism, under slavery, right, kind of under the subjugation of enslaved peoples, we can begin to see kind of these traces of resistance, right? Despite being in the most oppressive situation, right? These folks are kind of carving out ways to take care of their hair, right? Kind of using things from the kitchen to make products that will allow them to like soften their hair and style their hair, right? We're kind of mixing up oils and butters and clays and kind of plant-based products in order to style our hair and to maintain our hair, despite, of course, having little to no resources under enslaved conditions to do so, right? So I think that's maybe what we could sort of say is like the earliest, right, form of like a kind of activism or kind of resistance around it. Post-enslavement, we kind of see some of those earliest hair care entrepreneurs. We get the Madam C.J. Walkers, the Annie Turbo Malones. These women were able to, of course, blaze unprecedented trails in terms of selling hair care products. They were able to be financially successful doing this. Their contemporaries often would couch the kind of selling of these products in this kind of racial uplift discourse, right? We're kind of uplifting the race and taking pride in our hair and supporting Black-owned businesses, right? Also, early to mid-20th century, we see the hair salon really become this really important space. The hair salon, of course, had these kind of pragmatic needs, right? We got to go, we got to get our hair done, things like that. But they also served as these really important kind of intra-racial, right? Intra-communal physical spaces. And so economically, they were mostly Black patrons and mostly Black neighborhoods. The kind of specificity of the Black dollar being super important for these hair salons and barbershops, we could say as well. They also provided spaces for kind of consciousness raising and activism and things like that throughout the 20th century. They also sort of provided these kinds of spaces for like sisterhood, right? And just kind of conversations and kind of talking about hair and talking about beauty. We also sort of see during the 20th century, the sort of Black club women, these kind of Black middle class organizations of women who get together and try to do different like good works in the community. And for these women, kind of hair, adornment, clothing, right? We would kind of talk about a lot of this as quote unquote respectability today, but also these women sort of used hair, used clothing, used these things as forms of resistance, right? Again, this kind of idea of like, we're going to try to mobilize these things in order to quote unquote advance the race, uplift the race. Mid to late 1960s, of course, brings us Black Power Movement, Black is Beautiful, Stokely Carmichael, Angela Davis, these folks who sort of used the iconography of the Afro and the kind of Black physicality being beautiful as a kind of rhetorical, subversive idea of addressing white supremacy. It sort of stood in to represent a kind of pro-Black politic. It sort of became the Afro for all of this stuff. I mean, it sort of became symbolically in the Black arts movement as well, kind of late 1960s into the 1970s. A lot of the kind of images and art and performances and stuff like that would incorporate the Afro. We see some cases in the 1980s, including infamously a case with American Airlines of these cases about Black hair in the workplace, basically. We also see in the 1980s, the Jerry Curl and Oprah and kind of different hairstyles that were in. The 2000s, of course, sort of bring us the contemporary natural hair movement, really kind of at this intersection of internet-based spaces. A kind of general interest in like going green is happening at the time. We see kind of general kind of like reusable shopping bags and organic or chemical free like products and foods, right? We see kind of a general interest in all of those things. This contemporary natural hair movement is much more about kind of health and like my journey and like things like that. But of course, it is inherently political, right? When we think about this kind of history, as the natural hair movement begins to flourish and develop online, 2 years later, we get the proliferation of Black Lives Matter. And so these two things are kind of happening concurrently in terms of the really reckoning with these conversations about systemic anti-Blackness. So I think it's kind of hard to pull those two things apart contextually. You know, I guess where I would just kind of leave it is we get this thing called the Crown Act a few years back. It's legislation that aims to make discrimination against hair texture and hairstyles illegal. You know, needless to say, that legislation and that work is very much kind of on the backs of Black women, participants of the contemporary natural hair movement, sort of Black women's organizing, kind of Black women yapping about this for many, many decades. And so I'll be curious to see kind of where that continues to go.
Dr. Kristen Denise Rowe, thank you so much for having this conversation with me.
Thanks so much for inviting me. I really enjoyed it.
That was Dr. Kristen Denise Rowe. She's an associate professor of American Studies at California State University, Fullerton. The Dialogue team is focused on creating a program that highlights and shares important conversations for this community. If you appreciate having a space dedicated to amplifying local Black voices, please consider a gift of support during our fall fund drive. Here's more information on how you can donate. From Illinois Soul, this is Dialogue. I'm Kennedy Vincent. Dialogue is an exchange about culture, straight from the soul. You can catch us on Saturday mornings at 11 and Tuesdays at 7 p.m. on Illinois Soul. Whether you've been in your grandmother's chair or the salon chair, Black beauty salons and barbershops are a part of the Black community. They've been cultural hubs for centuries. It's where stories are told and Black identity is shaped. The hubs these beauticians and barbers foster are not created out of thin air, but rather through education, sweat, resilience, and hair grease. Supporting a Black business in the Black community means going to our local beauticians and barbers. These have been sanctuaries where our Blackness thrives authentically, and we're constantly reminded of who we are. Joining the conversation now is Mr. Ashra Knox, also known as Osho Picasso. He is the owner of Beard Culture, a barbershop and gallery in Urbana at Lincoln Square Mall. I joined him in the shop to talk about barbershop's impact on our culture. How are you today? How are you feeling?
How are you?
How long have you had the barbershop? How long have you been doing this for?
I've been cutting for about 23, 24 years. We've been at Lincoln Square for about 3.5 years now, opened up right after the pandemic.
What made you want to start doing this?
Actually, growing up just in the neighborhood, culturally, we love our hair and, you know, looking fresh. And so my uncle was a barber at Rose and Taylor for a long period of time. So for me, it was kind of second nature. I always enjoyed it and got into it early. And then on the back end, it's just something I wanted to do for a living.
So this is also a family legacy because your son is here as well. What's the legacy?
I actually have two sons. I have an uncle. I have two great uncles in Louisiana and Jackson, Mississippi that were barbers. And I also have my son, two sons that are barbers. So yeah, it kind of runs in the family, if you will.
What does the shop mean to the community?
In my opinion, I think it means a lot to have an environment that, you know, is family friendly and professional. People can come and be serviced. So I think it's a plus to Lincoln Square Mall and to the community of Urbana and Champaign as well.
Why does the barbershop feel like home to so many?
Because we can come here, you know, it's been called the Black Man's Barbershop, Country Club. It's a place that you can come and feel comfortable and, you know, talk about sports, politics, religion, watch sports, and just kind of keep up with what's going on, worldly events and community events as well.
Why is it important that we keep these spaces and we keep creating these spaces for Black men and the culture?
Because it gives us a space to be comfortable and feel like we belong. And so it's something that we've had since the late 19th, early 20th century, and so it's a cornerstone of our community.
what is the relationship between a man and his barber? Because, you know, if the barber's out of town, the man's not getting his hair done.
Actually, we're therapists, we're counselors, to some we're uncles, father figures. Just we you know, serve as a little bit of everything. The relationships are important, and for a lot of my clients, my relationships has grown, from client, barber, to just personal friendships.
So this episode, we're talking about black hair. How has the relationship we've built through our hair impacted our culture throughout history?
Wow. It shows our creative nature. It's part of our culture and who we are. And, you know, to some extent, it defines us, you know, culturally. And so it's also become magnetic to other cultures. Now, you see a lot of other cultures who mimic our hairstyles and actually come into our barbershops and salons to be serviced as well, something you didn't see years ago.
Salons and barbershops are primarily black-owned spaces. How do we pour into them, and how do they pour into us? Tell us more about this reciprocity within our own spaces.
Without our clients, you know, there's no us. We can't do what we do without the community, and so it's a give and take. We provide a service, but also they provide for us. So it's, like I said, a give and take.
And there's so many different ways that black men and women can wear their hair, from braids to curls to locks, you know, to get in a lineup. What do you think that says about black culture?
That we don't have limitations. We're well-rounded, and we can, you know, we're creative and can pull anything off.
Why do you think it's important to have this type of diversity within our community?
Because it allows everybody to be an individual and just to stand out and, you know, just represent not only their culture but themselves individually. So I think it's important to be able to, you know, be part of the culture but also have your own identity within it.
How do we keep these traditions and history at the forefront of our culture?
Making sure that we don't forget them and throwing them by the side and not talking about them. Things like what you're doing, I think, is important to make people understand the importance of community and our businesses within our community that serve us and just our community in general.
What do you hope for the future of black hair and black expression?
That it continues to grow. I feel like I call it the golden era of barbering and just the hair industry. So I hope it continues to go forward and without limitations and just continues to grow. It's a billion-dollar business, you know, all over the world. And so we've continued to influence not only our culture but others, and so I hope it just continues to grow.
Tell us about the golden era.
Yeah, so the golden era, when you look at not only the creative aspect of it, but the pricing and what it costs now to have these services, there's never been a time that's been more lucrative in the hair industry for people to really be able to take care of themselves and their families. So, and there's so many things that are going on. Like, personally, I've done a podcast, been part of a podcast that I created for about 2 or 3 years, in the process of doing actually a barber documentary. But there's also different types of advancements, clippers, marketing from Instagram and social media in general. So there's so much, and so it's grown so much that I just consider it to be the golden era.
What does it mean to you to be a barber, and what does it mean to you to have your own shop?
Freedom. I'm able to, you know, do it my way, allow my creativity to set in regards to how I service my clients. When I come, you know, I worked in the school setting for a number of years, so when I come here, I understand that, you know, I put 100% into everything that I did when I punched the clock for everyone else, so I can put 150% in for myself and just creating a legacy for myself and my family. So,
artwork is displayed throughout the shop. Mm-hmm. It was created by your father?
Probably about 98% of the pieces are my father's. He's artist, been an artist all my life, and so I just thought, again, creating something, you know, within the community but family oriented, that we could leave a legacy, just kind of made sense. I'm into art because I grew up around it, and it's something that, you know, I've seen all my life, so it just kind of made sense to add that piece to the barbershop, just to add some culture and add some class to it as well. A lot of barbershops deal with the lot of different aspects of our culture, but not necessarily the art aspect. So I thought it would kind of set us apart.
How does it feel to have the artwork hung up and inspire you within your own artistry?
For a long time, I didn't look at what I do as an art. And so my dad and I, we were having a conversation one day just in regards to me not being able to draw. And he just mentioned, like, what you do is your art, you know, the head is your canvas. And so, again, it just lets me know that there are no limits to what we're able to do, and just know that art comes in different shapes and forms.
Ash, thank you so much for joining me in this conversation.
Thank you very much. Very nice meeting you.
Very nice meeting you.
That was Ashra Knox, also known as Asho Picasso. He's the owner of Beard Culture, a barbershop and gallery in Urbana at Lincoln Square Mall. Joining the conversation now is Naisha Young, also known as Gifted Hands. She recently became a teacher at Tricosi Hair School, and she's been doing hair, specifically locks, in the Champaign-Urbana community since 2015, but she's been doing hair since she was 11. Young created Champaign's first after-school braiding club, the Gifted Academy.
Thank you for joining me for this conversation.
No problem. Thank you for coming.
You were originally behind the salon chair, and now you're in front of the classroom teaching students. You were telling me that you were first inspired to start teaching when a preteen came to you and asked if she could learn from you how to braid hair and do other styles. And you were telling me that through teaching her, you learned how to be a teacher. So how do you teach your current students that the energy they have in their personal life can also determine the energy they have when working on a client's crown?
So when we first started, we did the classroom agreements, but I also introduced them to setting intentions and affirmations. So I like to open the class with that. If anyone has any affirmations or if anyone has any intentions that they would like to set, it doesn't have to be just with school. It could be personal. It could be relationship, it could be anything. So that's how we incorporate all of those things.
When it comes to a client and stylist relationship, how do you balance a safe space for women to just take their wig off and be themselves and to trust you?
I don't know how I do it, but I think that I just understand, one, being a woman. And so we all have insecurities. We all know how it feels to have our hair done, to not have our hair done. I just know how it feels. So it's like, with that understanding, I have more consideration or compassion to understand. And I just incorporate that. I want every person who sits in my chair, whether it's a woman, whether it's kids, whether it's a little boy, whether it's an older man, I want everyone to feel comfortable enough to bear your natural self, you know, like it is a safe space essentially. But I think keeping that in the back of my mind is like, everyone's a person, everyone has insecurities, everyone has something going on, everyone's sensitive about their hair, whether it's an older man or a younger boy or a young female, everybody has insecurities about their hair. So being able to lessen those insecurities and make people feel secure once they leave, in teaching them about their hair so that they know how to take care of it at home, they can maintain it themselves if need be. Like, I consider all of that. So
you specialize in natural hair. Why do you think black hair is seen as unprofessional in corporate America and has these negative societal beliefs about our hair and how we show up in these professional corporate spaces?
I don't know why, because it's different, and anything different is just scary. And a lot of spaces are owned and operated by non-black people. And so that ultimately means they create the rules, the standard for what they want, just making us feel like we need to change our physical appearance to fit in. And when you do that, you feel like you're not enough. You feel like you can't reach another level because of your appearance, something you can't control. But also, once you start altering yourself, you start altering your hair, now it's damaging, and now you're doing more to cover it up versus being able to leave your hair in its natural state and letting it flourish and taking care of it in a healthy way. Sometimes you start neglecting your natural self to fit into certain standards, or to even just avoid uncomfortable conversation. Just cover it up. I have a lot of clients who are older and they're in more corporate, you know, some work at the university, some work at the different government offices, and it's always a pressure to look neat and clean or to look a certain way, so there's unnecessary conversation is limited. So I think that we just are always in a space of conforming.
Tell us about creating Champaign's first after-school braiding club, the Gifted Academy.
It is a wonderful thing. It's open for any and everybody. Whatever student wants to learn how to braid, they can be there. At this current time, it's only at Edison Middle School, but I am open to creating a more extensive program for all schools of all levels, of all ages. But I don't just teach how to braid, I do the same things, and that's where I got it from. I teach intentions, I teach affirmations, because ultimately they might not be a hairstylist, but they can use affirmations at every level of their life. I see it as also like a mentor. Whatever you're creative in, you can use it to make money, make a living, a career. This is what this can be for you. Teaching time management, like all of the things that go into doing hair, essentially can be taught in this after school braid club. And it's not just used for hair, it's used for, okay, time management. I ask them about what your grades look like. If your grades aren't good, you can't be here. But if you want to be here, maybe we need to allow you time to do your homework.
Creating the space to help children foster and nurture their art, how have you grown as a teacher and a student?
I am definitely a student of life. For me, I feel like it makes me accountable. I can't just talk the talk, like I have to walk the walk, and I'm still growing as a person. I'm still learning time management. I'm applying the things that I'm teaching them about so that I can give them a personal experience, like a personal story. Like, I'm working on this too. Like, we're working on it together. Or, you know, you kind of been there and done it.
Miss Naisha, Miss Gifted Hands, thank you so much for joining me in conversation.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
You can find the Dialogue podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube. And you can give us a follow on Instagram and Facebook at Illinois Soul. This episode of Dialogue was produced by Nidhi Shastri, Penny Bradford, Troy McDonald, and myself, Kennedy Vincent.
Our news and public affairs director is Reginald Hardwick, and production assistance by Steve Mork. Dialogue is a part of Illinois Soul and Illinois Public Media. Join us for our next Dialogue every Saturday morning at 11 a.m. and Tuesday night at 7 p.m. on Illinois Soul FM 101.1 and WILL AM 580, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. The Dialogue team is focused on creating a program that highlights and shares important conversations for this community. If you appreciate having a space dedicated to amplifying local Black voices, please consider a gift of support during our fall fund drive. Here's more information on how you can donate.